okay? If you're translating a book, you might want to say mental affliction. I like affliction. Affliction means something that's bothering you on a steady basis. And the Sanskrit word is klesha, and it comes from a root klish, which means to afflict or to bother somebody, like a horsefly flying around your head and biting you and bothering you, okay? So mental affliction is a pretty good translation. It happens in the mind and it bothers you, okay? What's this got to do with the Bodhisattva Charavatara? We're getting to a section where Geltabjay says in his commentary, you should kick butt on your mental afflictions, and you should get angry at your mental afflictions. So then it became a big debate in Tibet. Is this literal or is this figurative? You know, do they really mean that you should, that there could be a feeling of anger that was beneficial? Or is he saying something else? Okay, so, and you often hear people claim that the Buddha said that mental afflictions could be used for something good. You know what I mean? That you could maybe have a spell of anger over your jealousy or something like that, and that would be a good thing. So I'd like to discuss that tonight, and we'll be drawing from Geltabjay's commentary. Okay? So first we got to figure out what is a nyomo. Okay? What is a mental affliction? By the way, their role in general is to prevent you from getting to nirvana. Nirvana, you know, some people say you just disappear, some people say it's a restaurant. What it really is the permanent end of your nyomos. You don't have any more nyomos. Okay? That's all. It could happen tonight, it could happen tomorrow. The day that you have no more bad thoughts, the day that you're incapable of having a bad thought, you've reached nirvana. That's the definition of nirvana. Okay? You have to see emptiness directly to achieve that. It's impossible without that. Okay? But that's a long story. I won't go into that tonight. All right? First, I'd like to give you the definition of a mental affliction as it appears in your homework. Where is that? The long one is Rangyu Negi Galtaki Semyu Mashiwache Besemchu, but I made it short for you guys. Okay. Say Semyu Mashiwa Chepe Semchum. Semyu Mashiwa Chepe Semchum. Okay. Semyu means your mind. Okay. This refers to your mind as a stream, the stream of your mind. Mashiwa Chepa means destroys your peace of mind. Destroys your peace of mind. Semchung means a mental function, okay? Part of your mind. In Buddhism, we divide between the main mind and the mental functions, okay? Main mind is your raw awareness, the fact that you are conscious at all. It's sort of what you lose if Mike Tyson hits you real hard, okay? I mean, we say then it moves to a lower level. But sem, tsosem, main mind is your general fact that you are aware of anything at all. And then mental functions are defined by functions, okay, like anger, jealousy, desire, things like that. And they are defined by that, okay? So they focus on a particular, instead of just being aware of the object in a raw way, they focus on some detail of the object. And so they're called a mental function, okay? Like jealousy is focusing on someone else's good things or something like that, okay? Yeah? She asked the difference between Semba and membership. Semba is one of the mental functions. And it's a basically, it depends on what your school you're in, but Sempa is a mental function. And it's distinguished from Sem. So Sem, Semba, and Semchung are different things. So Sem, or Sem, is mind, main mind. Then Sempa is the movement of the mind, the fact that the mind moves to a new object. Okay, and then Semchung is a mental function. Semba is a Semchung, and not a Sem. Yeah, and Namashepa is Sem. If you divide Sem, it's six kinds. So the raw awareness of your what you see, the raw awareness of what you hear, like that. Okay, so the Namshes are not Semchungs. But Semba is a Semchung. And Namches are Sem. Okay? And there's also Yi and Lo. And you got to deal with that. Okay. Now, it's interesting, in Tibetan there are many words for mind. You know, I studied Russian for a long time. There's 50 words for dreary. Okay. And in Tibetan, there's 50 words for wisdom, you know, light, happiness, virtue. It's funny. Each language has its own flavor. Okay. So, the definition of a mental affliction is that when you have one, you don't feel happy. It ruins your peace of mind. Okay. So that's what they do. That's their function. Okay. I want to list for you the 6 major ones. And I think it's important to know your enemy. Okay. By the way, I'm dedicating this class to the mental afflictions I had this morning and last Saturday. Okay, that's why we're doing this. Okay, number one. Say, Dechat. Dechat. Dechat means, usually it's translated as desire. Now, this is one of the 6 principal mental afflictions. It means that this mental affliction is circling around in your mind almost every minute of the day. Okay? Desire to me means an uncontrollable urge for chocolate ice cream, looking at Playboy magazines, something like that. Desire to me means, if somebody said, did you have desire today? It's almost like, yeah, maybe once or something, you know. But this is supposed to be something that's circling around in your mind every few seconds or every few minutes. I prefer, when you really study what it's defined as, you know, which is like, you only, you the minjawar jabi semba, something like that. It's really more like, how should we say, not wanting to lose something and being ignorant about it. So I like to call it ignorantly liking something, okay? Liking something ignorantly. You see, does the Buddha desire that you reach it? Nirvana. Yes. Does the Buddha have wishes, desires, hopes? Of course. So, desire is a tough word. You know, does the Buddha have Dechak? No way. Okay. So, Dechak, being the first of the 6 main mental afflictions, is more like wanting things in an ignorant way, liking things in an ignorant way, and this happens every moment of your day. You're doing it all day long. What's the test of whether a desire is a holy desire or an ignorant desire? It boils down to what you would do to get the thing. Okay? Very simply, okay? The test is that if you would undertake a non-virtue to get what you want, then you are motivated by ignorant desire. Okay? If you would hurt someone to get what you want, then you're having dechak. Okay? If you want to achieve something like get people enlightened, okay? And you would and understanding karma, you'd refuse to ever do anything wrong to achieve that goal. We would call that kind of desire what? Bodhicitta, okay? Seriously, okay? So be careful. I mean, you can't say all desires are. The Buddha, of course, desires to save us. All bodhisattvas desire to see all beings liberated. You know what I mean? This has to be defined as something like ignorantly liking things. What does it mean to be ignorantly liking things? You have $10. Somebody else needs $10. You can give it to them easily, and you don't want to give it to them because you don't want to lose $10. And not to give it to them is ignorance itself, because the only way you got $10 was what? To give it to somebody. So to refuse to give $10 to somebody who needs it and you have it, is dechak. It's just stupid. It's ignorant. It's blind. It's totally wrong, because it's the best way to lose money. Okay? Simply. Okay? It's just the stupidest thing you can do if you want money. If you like having money, you must give it. Okay? You got to get used to that. Okay? No money in the world was ever created by anything but the act of giving. Get used to that. There is not a single red penny in the universe that came into existence except that you gave something to somebody else. Period. There is no other kind of money. All other kinds of money are non-existent. There's no such thing as self-existent money. No such thing. So the idea of holding on to your money is the height of ignorance. It's the best way to lose money. It's the best way to be poor. Okay? And conversely, giving away your money properly, responsibly, thoughtfully, totally without any attachment, totally without any hope for reward or something like that, is frankly the best way to improve the economy, your economy, okay? It's frankly the best way to have as much as you ever want forever, okay? You gotta get used to that. If you believe that there's a dollar that you could keep by not giving it away, that's a self-existent dollar. That's the same thing as a two-headed purple 40-foot elephant rampaging through this room right now. Remember him? Okay, gakcha, the non-existent thing. And a dollar that you could keep and not give away, and then that would make you have the dollar, that doesn't exist. There's no such thing. Get used to it, okay? So that's duchak. You have duchak all day long, all day long. Okay, anytime you do anything that upsets your peace of mind, that relating to getting something, you're having duchak. Okay? That's the test. The main test is, would you ever do anything wrong to keep that dollar or to get a dollar? Because then you have ignorance. That's a sign of ignorance. That's a certain brand of ignorance on your head. You know, you have ignorance. Okay? You've got to get used to that. Second one. Say kongto. Kongto. Technically speaking, kongto means anger. In this context, it's the opposite of duchak. What would that be? Disliking something ignorantly. Okay? And you do that all day long. Okay? You do that every few seconds. Your mind is slightly irritated, slightly disliking something, slightly not wanting something to happen, and simultaneously not understanding why that thing is there. Okay? That's ignorantly disliking other things. Okay? And this applies to everything that happens around you during the day that you don't like. Okay? And you're having a mental affliction. Okay? It could be not liking the perspiration on your arm from the heat in the room. Okay? It could be not liking the dress that somebody has on. It could be, you know, being irritated that you have to go somewhere tomorrow and thinking about it tonight. Okay? All of those things are kongto. Okay? And they only can survive as long as you misunderstand your world. Okay? As long as you misunderstand your world, you can go on thinking those thoughts. The minute your understanding of this world gets strong enough, you won't think those thoughts anymore. They just won't come to you. Okay? You can dislike. Does the Buddha dislike anything? Of course. People in the hell realms. He's unhappy. He'd rather not. He dislikes that condition. That's brilliant. Okay? But does he dislike it in an ignorant way? No. He knows where it came from. He knows how to stop it. Okay? And if you really, really, really believe that all the negative things in your world were coming from you, if every asshole you ever met, and you knew it was you, that everything you disliked about anyone is a reflection of your own mind, and only that, then how could you go around being irritated all the time? Except at yourself, maybe, okay? But that's the way it is, okay? There is no negative quality in any other person you have ever met that was not created by you. Get used to it, okay? So, if you've ever seen Chijan Rinpoche's face in his older years, he's got this sad smile. I'll never forget it. It's just like that, you know. It's like, how could you keep shooting yourself in the toe, you know? And it's not a hatred, and it's not dislike. It's a kind of sadness about the condition that we hurt ourselves more than anyone else could ever hurt us. Okay? That's all. And you can be sad about it, Like the Buddha can experience the... Buddhas have the mental function of compassion or some kind of sweet sadness about our condition. It doesn't upset their mind streams in an angry way. They don't get anger. Oh, there's a picture. That's not quite the one I'm thinking, but he's got this, a few pictures of him where he just looks like, will you stop hurting yourself, you know? Okay? This is Rinpoche's root lama, the Dalai Lama's junior tutor, okay? Passed away in 1981. Where is that? Go here. Thank you. Wait. So that's all. That's the second one. Any kind of dislike or unhappiness that you experience right now is based on ignorance. Down deep in your heart, you believe that this person's irritating quality belongs to them, and it doesn't. It's coming direct from your own past karma, and it only exists in your mind. Okay, you got to get used to that, and it changes your whole perception of your day the more you understand that. Okay, you just go around every time you meet somebody who's irritating, every time somebody hurts you, you're like, what did I do? What exactly did I do? Oh, yeah. And then you figure it out and you deal with it, but you don't get upset, okay? It's a different thing. The more strong your wisdom gets, the less upset you can get, because you understand that you created this thing. And you understand how to stop it, okay? That's number two. Control. Say Nagya. Nagya. Nga means me, gya means king. Guess what Nagya means? Pride. Okay, pride. By the way, there are 84,000 mental afflictions. These are the top six. So you must be having it most of the time. Okay, if it makes it into the top six, it must be part of your mind most of the time. There's different commentaries on Nagya. Sometimes they divide it into how many kinds? Nine and seven? Anyway, mainly into nine. There's this beautiful nun out in New Jersey named Chunila who translated the text on these. So maybe you could get her to give you a copy someday. And did a nice job on it. Anyway, there are about nine different kinds of pride. Basically, it's looking at people who are better than you and thinking, let's say it's like His Holiness, and you say, he's definitely better than me, but not by much. Okay? Then below that, there's a second kind of pride, which is like, he's better than me, but just in that one thing. Okay? And then there's another kind that says, everybody thinks he's better than me, but he's not. He's the same as me. Okay? And then, so basically, these are all focused on someone who's truly better than you. Okay? And having this real, delusion that you're better than them. Okay? Or maybe almost as good. Okay? Then there's a kind of pride which is focused on people at your own level and says, I'm definitely better than them. Okay? And then there's a third kind of pride that focuses on people who are maybe slightly less than you in some quality. And you say, I'm infinitely better than them in that quality. Okay, so basically pride is focusing on three different levels and having three different delusions about it. Okay, Nagya. There is a tantric concept about Nagya, which is 100% different. And there's a beautiful commentary on it by Mucha Dhammabhadra, which if you ever get a chance, you should read. He talks about all nine kinds of pride, and then he talks about divine pride in a beautiful commentary. Okay? So, if you ever have a chance. Okay, number four. The basic function of pride, by the way, is that you can't learn anything from anybody else. If you really believe that you're better than everybody else, you can't learn anything from anybody else. And if you believe in some part of your mind that other people have qualities that you don't have yet, then you can just suck up life knowledge from everyone you're around. Like, you get better every time you meet somebody because you're always observing them to see what they have that you would like to have as far as personal qualities. So you're always improving. The more you can fight your ngagyo, the more you can learn. Okay? Especially Dharma knowledge. You can't learn much if you have Nagya. Almost impossible. Okay? Say Marikpa. Marikpa. Marikpa means ignorance. Not understanding your world. In fact, I should say it differently. Misunderstanding your world. Is there a difference between not understanding your world and misunderstanding your world? Big difference, okay? Abhidhamma Kosha says, the difference between knowledge and ignorance is not the difference between a friend and someone you don't know yet. It's the difference between a friend and an enemy. Okay? So, ignorance is the active opposite of knowledge. It's the destructive opposite of knowledge. It's a destructive misunderstanding of your world. Okay? You can't have any of the other mental afflictions if you have ignorance. Okay? Sorry, without ignorance. Okay? You must have ignorance or you can't have a mental affliction. You must misunderstand your world or you can't have affliction, a mental affliction. There's a couple other implications here. The final mental affliction that you get rid of, guess what it is? Just before you reach Nirvana. It's this one. In its most subtle form. Tiny seeds for misunderstanding your world in your mind. And there's a huge debate between all the different Buddhist schools, but the one that wins is the one that says, yeah, that's the last mental affliction you lose. And it is a mental affliction. Misunderstanding your world is a mental affliction. Okay? There are some schools that say it's not. They say it's responsible for all the mental afflictions, but it's not in itself a mental affliction. Okay? But the highest school of Buddhism says it is. All right? So that's the ultimate mental affliction. With regard to this pen, what would it be? How did I get this pen? I gave a pen to someone. Okay? No, I bought it. That's wrong view. Get used to it. It's very difficult. Okay? Is it completely different from what your society is telling you? Yes. Does what your society told you so far, has it worked? No. So give it a shot. What do you got to lose? You know, the best that can happen if you follow what your society says right now is that you can get old and die and lose all the things you sweated for 50 weeks a year. Okay? That's the promise that your society has, the shining goal that your society has put forward for you. Work for 50 weeks a year so you can have things that you'll lose as soon as you die. You know? And can't use except for 2 weeks a year. Okay, that is the promise of your society. Okay, and they say that this thing came from a plastic factory and a petroleum. We have to fight the Arabs because they control the oil that this comes from. We can't get it if we don't protect the oil. That's wrong view. Where did this pen come from? It comes from giving a pen. It's that simple. Very difficult. Okay? It's very difficult to live by. Right? The only way this pen ever got in this room was because each person who is enjoying the use of this pen has done something to help another person with writing something. Okay? That's why this pen got here. That's all. You have to start thinking like that. Okay? Everything else is ignorance and nothing else is true. Okay? So is it not true that if you have enough money and you go to the store you can get a pen? No, it's not true. Why? You might have a heart attack on the way. They might be out of pens. Okay? Oh, come on. What's that got to do with it? It has everything to do with it. We're talking about what really brings the pen, which never fails. You see what I mean? If you give away writing instruments, you will always get a pen. You must get a pen. It's infallible. Okay? Karma and emptiness are infallible. That's where pens come from. It's not from money. And it's not from going to the store. Get used to it. Are you telling me that if I never went to the store and I needed a pen right now, somebody would show up with a pen? Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. And it's infallible. It never fails. Okay? Get used to it. Going to the store and giving them green paper is not what makes pens. Get used to it. Okay? And you can't create more pens by killing people to protect your oil supplies or something. Okay? You're just going to create more suffering. All right? You've got to get used to that. It's very difficult, extremely difficult. Until you can think like that, you'll never stop suffering. All right? Number five. Say tetum. Tetum. Tetum means doubt. Okay? Now you got to explain this one, okay? Is it wrong to doubt Buddhism? No. You've had a quotation from Maitreya himself who said what? Do you remember? If you're not sure about some teaching you heard, like the one I just gave you about the pen, because I saw a couple faces like, okay? Maitreya says, put it on the shelf. Just suspend judgment on it. Don't decide correct, don't decide wrong. Don't believe everything even a Buddhist teacher tells you, because you know from the course last December that's dangerous, even with the Buddha, okay? Don't believe everything they tell you until it makes sense to you. But also don't reject it until you've decided convincing evidence that this is wrong, okay? If it's something that you can't confirm yet, leave it for a while. Is that tetsam? Is that a mental affliction?
No.
Does it like destroy your peace of mind? No. It's like, okay, Michael Rhodes said it, could be okay. He said some good things, but I'm not convinced yet, so I'll just shelve it until I have more information. That's perfect Buddhist behavior. Okay? But to say, oh, that's definitely stupid, is a mistake. Maitreya says, just leave it for a while and come back to it later. Have a shelf called... I have a very fine student in North Carolina. He's a physician. He keeps a book of his doubts about Buddhism. He's a brilliant Buddhist scholar. He knows these courses backwards and forwards. But he has a book that he keeps of issues that he still has about... He's a devout Buddhist. You know, he would give his life for his Lama. But he's got this... He's still got a little book that he keeps of stuff he's not sure about yet. And he... You know, he takes it every time he meets a new Lama. He says, what do you think about number 56 here? You know, and... Okay, and I think that's great. That's the way we're supposed to be in Buddhism. If you weren't that way, then Buddhism would start to become corrupted because everybody would just believe everything that everybody said. Okay, and then there'd be a problem. You must examine, you must question. Must, okay? So what's tetsam? Tetsam is lazy doubt. Okay? Tetsam is... Lazy doubt. Come on, think for 5 minutes about it. Decide. Don't sit on the fence. Okay? Is your Lama Vajradhara or not? You know, make up your mind. You know, you just haven't thought about it. You know, what are the odds of running into a person with Ken Rinpoche's qualities? Okay? What are the odds? Oh, about 1 in 500 million. I'm not kidding. Oh, so is he a special guy or not? Make up your mind, you know what I mean? No, I mean, think about it for 10 minutes and decide, you know, and then don't waver, you know, don't be wimpy, don't be half-hearted, you know. Make up your mind. Lord Buddha in many scriptures said Ken Rinpoche is an enlightened being, period. Now decide, okay? Put the evidence, we call it a chegom. It's called an analytical meditation. Put the question up in the center stage. Is he or is he not? You know, and then... Use all the proofs you've seen. He watches baseball a lot. Yeah, but he's always doing that rosary thing while he's watching baseball. And he turns it off right in the middle of an important hit. You know, maybe he's doing something else. Nah, he's just watching baseball. Yeah, but he's been teaching 4,000 hours in the last 25 years. I don't know, you know. He's with this. Yeah, he didn't charge anything for anybody either. And then you like go through this analysis. You know, you debate your own wimpy mind. And finally just decide, okay? And then stick with it. Okay, so tetsam is where you're just too lazy to make up your mind. Okay, that's a bad kind of doubt. That's main mental affliction number 5. Okay, last one. Say tawa.
Tawa.
Tawa. Tawa means worldview. Okay, in this case it means a wrong worldview. We were thinking what to call all of our projects. You know, we have 14, 15 different major things going on. So what do we call it? And we came up with worldview. That's why there's worldview on the front of that thing. Worldview means, where do you really think this pen came from? That's all. Very simple. Okay? If you had a choice of 5 things to do to get yourself a pen, what would you do? I'll give you choices, okay? Borrow some money to go buy a pen, you know. Steal the one I have here when I'm not here, when I'm over there, you know. look in your neighbor's purse while they're up there getting refreshments. Look around on the floor, see if there's someone that somebody dropped. Or give one to somebody else. You see, if you pick number five, you have correct worldview. That's what this whole organization and all those projects are for. One thing, to get people to think like that. Because that's true. Okay? And the other four are false. Okay? They're not. So ultimately, the number six, worldview. In this case, it's wrong worldviews. It's a wrong way of thinking about your world. Okay? And that's, it actually helps produce all the other ones. Now, there are five different flavors of this. I'm not going to go into it tonight, okay? But they are basically wrong ideas about your world, okay? How does that differ from Marikpa? We already had ignorance, right? So what's the difference between a wrong worldview and ignorance? Wrong worldviews, technically, in this presentation of the main mental affliction, are products of your ignorance, okay? They come from ignorance. Ignorance has a very specific meaning in this context of misunderstanding yourself. Okay? So Marikpa here, ignorance means misunderstanding what you are. And then number six is several different versions of wrong views that come out of misunderstanding your world. For example, not believing in future lives. Okay? Should you believe in future lives? Do you believe in future life? Kedu J says what? All the Tibetans believe in future life. Nobody I've ever met could explain to me why there should be a future life. Okay, they believe it because their parents told them that. Okay, and that's just people don't understand why there should be a future life. One of the most serious wrong views is not to believe that there something will go on after you die. Otherwise, you can't practice Dharma very well. Okay. It's one of the hardest things to believe in. So Maitreya says, put up all the evidence for it in your mind and decide that probably there isn't a future life. Leave 10%, say, maybe there's not a future life. But at least leave it like that. Don't say there's no future life, okay? That's all. That would be a wrong view. That would be a number six, okay? Got it? Okay. Now the question comes from Gyaltab J. When Master Shantideva in the Bodhisattva Charavatara says, get mad at your own mental afflictions, get mad at your own jealousy, get mad at your own desire. Come on, have some marm, have some, I can only think of bad words, have some, guts, okay? And get up there and punch them out. You say, I'm tired of you, I'm fed up with you. You've been ruining my life for life after life after life. You've been giving me suffering. I'm mad. Holy anger, And then when you think of the path and you think of your lama, I love you. I'll fight for you. I'll do anything for you. Have this desire, you see? So it seems like Gyaltab J or Master Shantideva is recommending mental afflictions. And then there's this big debate about did he mean it or not? Okay, and some Tibetan authors who are criticized by Jetsun Kapa and Gyaltab J said, yeah, he meant it. You should get angry. And you should have this overwhelming loyalty to your lama where you'd even hurt somebody else to protect your lama. Okay? You should do that. And then as you get closer to enlightenment, you can drop them. Okay? After they've performed their function. Because somewhere in Master Shantideva's writings it sounds like that. Okay? Then Gyaltab J says, come on, don't be a fool. Okay? Why? About the anger thing, he says, yeah, you're supposed to have maybe what you could call a righteous anger, but it's not a mental affliction. There's no kind of anger quality about it. It is not in any way upsetting your peace of mind. It is peace of mind. You see what I mean? It's like this clarity. It's a big difference. Okay? It's a clarity which is tired of being pushed around. And it focuses on the mental afflictions in a very clear way. And it's not upset. It's very clear. It's like a parent who's pretending to be upset at their child and just saying, you can't do that. Okay? You can't do that. And they're not angry. And their mind is not simgyu mashiwatipa mayin. They're not upset at all. Their mind is totally calm, totally settled. And they're looking at their mental afflictions and they're saying, I'm going to kick your ass. Okay? And they're totally happy totally peaceful. Okay? There is no mental affliction. Get used to that idea. No such thing. Yeah. Yeah, you could say that. Yeah, indignation. Dignified indignation. Okay. But just, it's a clarity. It's a clarity and it's a power. It's like, we had it in the Lojong, right? Chim, chim, chim. You know, I'm gonna, you know, and but it's a kind of happy power, happy clarity. And there's no kind of upset mind, any kind of mental affliction sign there, okay? So he says, forget that idea. When lamas talk about using anger to destroy mental afflictions, they're not talking about a mental affliction. They're talking about a kind of power, kind of clarity, okay? Then he says, what about this idea of protecting your lama, you know? Like, what about this idea of somebody tries to hurt Ken Rinpoche or somebody like that? What are you supposed to do? Somebody attacks His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. What are you supposed to do about it? If you love them, if you're loyal to them, what should you do? You know, and Gyaltso Jay says, come on, wake up. Didn't you ever hear about correct view? Okay? Either His Holiness is a Buddha or not. Okay? If He is Chenrezig Avalokiteshvara, the compassionate holder of the White Lotus, He don't need you to protect Him. Okay? He's an enlightened being. If someone tries to attack Him, He can't be hurt anyway. Could you see someone kill His Holiness? Yes. That's your problem. That's your karma. Okay? Can His Holiness be hurt by somebody else? No. Totally impossible. No such thing. Okay? So if your Lama is a Buddha, they don't need you to take up arms and fight off their enemies. Okay? Because they don't have and they don't need you. Okay? If they're not an enlightened being, well, then they're just experiencing the result of their karma, okay? And you should help them in a happy, good way, you know, like help His Holiness run away from Tibet without hurting anybody. You see what I mean? But you can never use that kind of loyalty as an excuse for hurting someone, okay? That's just another mental affliction of the kind that caused this problem in the first place. What are you going to do? Set up the causes for the problem to happen again by protecting your lama? You know, you're going to hurt someone to save your lama, you know, that's the best way to cause trouble more. It's the best way to bring more trouble, okay? So just say, that's Gyaltso Jay's explanation of those two ideas. They don't need your help like that. That's just causing more problems, okay? All right. They start to talk about... There's a question here that says, why is it important that the continued existence of a mental affliction depends on a misperception? Why is that? See, you can't have a mental affliction unless you don't understand your world, okay? If you misunderstand your world, you can have a mental affliction. So the clue is that you can get rid of them forever, okay? What's the definition of nirvana? Puntok is good at that. Nyundip malupa bambe sosa tango. Okay? Nyundip means mental affliction obstacles. Malupa means every single last one. Bambe means you get rid of them. But then there's this weird thing that says sosa tango through individual analysis. What do you do, Freudian analysis on it? What does it mean, individual analysis? It means through your understanding of the four Arya truths after you see emptiness directly. Period. You have to see emptiness directly to get rid of your mental afflictions. Otherwise, impossible. Okay? You can band-aid them, you can't stop them. Okay? 90% of a lot of scriptures is about how to deal with your mental afflictions with band-aids. Okay? Someone hits you, think of them as your teacher. That lasts a day or something. Okay? Right? Okay? It cannot destroy that thing completely. You can't get rid of anger completely by thinking like that. It helps a lot. If you're a monk and you're attracted to some lady, think of her as your sister. Okay, it works for a while. All right? But it doesn't get rid of that tendency to think, to look at that way. And the only thing that can get rid of it is to see emptiness directly. Okay? That's the only thing. Because only that can destroy your inherent belief that pans come from stores and paying money. Okay? That's all. And you'll continue to do what you have to do to get money as long as you believe that. Okay? And you continue to do the wrong things until you see emptiness directly. Okay? Have to. I think that's a good place to leave it. I got two more advertisements for you. Oh, so maybe Thursday, possibly Friday, we might have some big lama here. So Not sure at all. Maybe I'd give it about a 25% chance, but I think it'd be worth it. Check it out. You might want to bring some flowers. If nothing else, we'll give them to Lord Buddha. Okay? Second thing, His Holiness will be teaching in Bodh Gaya, and we're going. And there's a committee who's asking people to donate, I think it's $10 each, and they're going to try to put 1 million butter lamps there or something like that, so that we can start the next 1,000 years the right way, and that His Holiness will be happy and stuff like that. So if you'd like to help with that, who is that? I think, oh yeah, she raised his hand for him. Okay, talk to that gentleman there. And I think it's a neat project. So they're going to try to collect enough to offer a lot of butter lamps there. Okay, is there anything else I'm supposed to announce? No. No, we'll do more later. Okay, please take a break, and then we'll start with your regular classes. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Sam. Okay. Okay, we'll start again. Very brief, okay? This is where I try to talk about the future of Dharma in America, okay? And other Western countries, I have to say, because all my Australian students hear the tape and they say, how about us? You know? One thing I want to announce before I forgot. You know, the Sixth Street Temple and all that beautiful place is donated by, without rent, by Leon. Salk, it's probably worth about $20,000 a month if he rented it, and he doesn't. He saves it for us to do our rituals and our prayers and things like that. And he never gets thanked, and no one ever sees him. He just gets to vacuum and stuff like that. One thing happened recently. One day he had his laptop stolen from his room, which is in the back of the temple, and we tried to replace that. And then recently, his Dharma books were stolen, his English books. So I'd like to encourage you guys, and I'll bring one. Everybody bring one or two books, like if you have an extra one, or one that you don't mind to put there, because whatever you put there is going to be used by somebody anyway. And bring it on Thursday, and we'll just surprise him, okay? So try to bring like one really great Dharma book that you have, and we won't tell him anything, we'll just put it there. I always had this fantasy about bodhisattva thieves who break into your house and put money in your wallet and so we can do something like that, okay? So don't forget, okay, because I feel really bad because, you know, we don't thank him enough, and he's been doing it for years and years. When someone does it so gracefully, then you forget about them after a while, and so I want to make sure we recognize him, okay? Okay, last thing. I was at Princeton today. This guy calls me. He's the dean of religious life. And he says, we've been checking you out, and would you basically come to Princeton University every once in a while and be on our board and help us serve the students spiritually and stuff like this. And then I said, I think it's a very valuable thing because I went to school here and there is a sort of a problem there, which is that everyone's so intellectually deep into things that they don't have any spiritual resources. You know what I mean? They don't have classes like this, or they don't have any chance to meditate, or they don't have a lama to help them, or something like that. They just have these committees and stuff. So I said, I'd love to, but I'm not going to be here, you know? And so he said, well, do you have any students who could come, you know? And then I thought in my mind, I said, you know, that's why we did the 7-year course, was this is the end, this is 6.5, 2/3 years later. And I'm looking him in the face and I'm like, who could I send, you know? And then I'm thinking, yeah, I can send. I have like 10 or 15 people I could send, you know? And then I think it dawned on me at that moment that, yeah, we do have 10 or 15 qualified people that have come out of these courses, you know, as a result of all these courses, which you don't think about because you go to them every day. But no one, very few people in the West have been through such a training. Maybe none. There's one small group in Hamburg, I think, and that's it. So you've had a unique opportunity, and the people especially who've been here for over 4 or 5 years, you've had most of the Geshe course. And if you ever get to Sarah May and speak Tibetan, you'll find out that you could debate. I mean, there's not anything in my Geshe exams, the 7 days of examinations in front of 1,500 monks, that wasn't in this course. And it was like piece of cake, you know, and you have that knowledge now. So all I wanted to say is that don't think that you're not qualified. Because you're a Westerner and because you don't have a pointed hat, you know, or the right eyes, I don't know what, but don't think that you're not qualified now. You are, okay? Especially those who have been through the whole course. The people who are teaching, you know, on a normal level in Tibet have not had as much training as you've had. Okay, you've had proper training, you've had sweet lineage initiations and teachings from Ken Rinpoche, you have all of the blessings, you have all of the knowledge, you've been through everything, so now you've got to start thinking in terms of helping out with the teaching load, you know, and like Punsok's doing a lot, and then each one of you should think, I could imagine in the 3 years that there will be 10 to 15 people. There'll be somebody in Brooklyn, there'll be somebody in Queens, I would like to see it in people's homes, because I think that's the sweetest way to do it. And it can be small groups. I think out in Santa Cruz, like for example, they have a group of 5 or 6 people who meet together, they watch the video, they eat popcorn, I think. And you know, they learn it, and then they discuss it, and that's how we have to do it now. So you've got to start thinking in mode of being a teacher. And you don't have to think that, oh, it's just, I'm sort of faking it or something like that. You're not, okay? You've had as much training as almost any of the monks in Sarah get. They memorize the books, which takes them an extra couple years. But, you know, the normal, what we call Lingse Geshe, which is what I am, you know, the middle Geshe that comes out of the monastery, you've had as much training as they have. And now you have to start thinking in terms of, like Dvorah has a nice group out in Freehold, and very beautiful group of people, like 20, 30 people are studying the courses, and it's going quite well. And I was very happy when I went there. It's like amazing, you know. And it's like having kids that you didn't know about or something, you know. And it's like that, you know. And it's beautiful. So you have to start thinking like that, you know. In the back of your mind, understand that you are well-trained. And you have had the blessings of the lineage through Ken Rinpoche. You can't get more than that, what you have. Now you have to start thinking in terms of, okay, this guy at Princeton says that there's a couple hundred kids interested in Buddhism and they need somebody to help. And you should be, now comes the time that, you know, all the classes you missed are going to haunt you. Okay? No, that's why I kept saying you can't miss classes, you know, because they're going to ask you that question. You're going to say, that was in the course, but I had a date that night. You know? Okay, because now you're the lineage holders. So I want to encourage you to, you have to start now thinking in terms of teaching other people and helping with that process. And I need people to go to Princeton. I need to be able to send people and say, and in my heart, no, this person's totally qualified. This person will be not just a good, technically a good teacher, but this person is also doing their meditations every day. They're good at doing their book. They've developed internally also. So I have no hesitation to send this person out to teach at this place. And I know they'll do a nice job. And you have to get to where, you have to understand that that responsibility is about to come down on your head. And that you have to start thinking like this. And you have to start thinking in these terms, okay? And it's not some kind of pride or some kind of egotism. It's not like that. You now have a serious responsibility. You know, somebody invested 7 years in you, and now you gotta go pay it off, you know. You have to go do something with it, or else the lineage ends here, which is dumb. That's not why we had this place, okay? So I want to encourage you to think like that. It's not some kind of egotism. It doesn't have to be, okay? It's really just providing a place. I don't mean being a missionary. We're not allowed to do that. We're not allowed to go door to door. You know, have you heard about Buddha? You know, not allowed to do that. I call it creating access, okay? Big difference between being a missionary and creating access, you know? So there's access to this knowledge if you want it. You know, here's the address. We don't charge anything. It's a small group, but the knowledge is very pure. The guy at Princeton freaked out when he saw the classes. He's like, this is unbelievable. You know, he's been running all the Judeo-Christian, Muslim, Hindu things at Princeton for 10 years. And he's like, I can't believe you guys are doing this stuff. He was really excited. So the idea is that you have to be ready now to help other people. And that should be in the back of your mind, okay? It's like we're at that age, you know, you're not going to, there's not that many years left in a normal person, okay? And you, now you have to turn around and help other people with it. And I have to be able to count on you. I have to be able to say, yeah, I can send you this person and this person and this person, okay? So now you got to think, mentally you have to now switch in terms of that, you have to switch your mind around and say, yeah, I could do that, you know, have some kind of confidence. And think in terms of how could you present it to X number of college students if you had to. You know, and how would you do it? You know, like how many times a week? What are they going to study first? You know, when am I going to do it? How am I going to do it? What am I going to teach first? What are we going to do second? You know, are we going to do video, audio? Are we going to do classes? Are we going to do debate? Are we going to meditate? You know, and think about, I want to put in your mind at this instant the seed that, you know, in 6 months you're going to have to start thinking this way of passing it on to other people and being clever about, oh, what's the best way to help the most people, okay? You have to start thinking like that, okay? That's all. Don't be shy about thinking of yourself as a teacher. That's how it's always been throughout the history of Buddhism. The student got to a certain place in the nest and then the teacher kicked him out. You think I wanted to come to New York? You know? Okay. Really? Okay. Last thing in my mind. 15 years I commuted here, I didn't spend a single day here. You know, and there comes a time when they say, you gotta go now. And get ready for that. Okay, have it in mind. It's the way it evolves. It's the way it's supposed to evolve. And there's no reason why it shouldn't. It has to happen here. Okay? That's part of the master plan. Okay? All right. We'll do a prayer. Okay. Thank you.